This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
According to Public Enterprises Minister Pravin Gordhan, South Africans should expect load shedding in the coming 9 to 12 months. I can tell you now, and Adil will confirm that with me, and also I think Elias will do that, it's going to be beyond 9 to 12 months. This is after, of course, he was asked yesterday whether Eskom's proposed 32% increase in tariffs for 2023 would ensure that there was no more load shedding or bailouts for the power utility. And I don't think the two are related. I think the two are related in a sense of that's what they need and that's what they will argue for, but it's not going to, in essence, it's not going to minimize load shedding, nor is it going to take load shedding away. Also, the minister has suggested, and we all saw that, that he will be restructuring the Eskom board. So that's it. I'm not going to read that any further because I have Elias Monache, the Black Business Council president. Let me bring him into the conversation because my other guest is here in studio. Elias, welcome to Power 98.7, Brur.
Thanks, and evening to the listeners of Power.
Sure, man. Elias, thank you so much for joining us. And you know, I think and I hope by the end of the conversation we'll have maybe, you know, parted with some information that might be useful to the listeners about what they can expect, and particularly your expertise in you know, the business part of things and what's going on there and how you perceiving, you know, what's going on at Eskom. Adil, finally nice to meet you, Brur.
Thank you so much.
And you know, the first thing I noticed about you was the beard.
I think it's a hallmark now.
First thing I noticed about you, as you walked in there, I saw the hat, I saw the everything, I saw like, hey, the man is smart, he wears a jacket as well. And and I can tell you what, even the beard is not just an anjaba, it's smooth, man.
I think it's blames to a terrible upbringing. My father always had a suit on as a man, even on weekends. So.
And the hat.
I had a terrible upbringing, yeah.
And those things stay with us, right?
Yeah, so being a gentleman, being properly dressed for every occasion, you know, even in my suits, I must put on a jacket. In my track suits, I'm even recommended that I must put on a jacket. So, yeah, terrible upbringing.
Strict upbringing.
Absolutely.
Adil, let's begin with Elias because he's the guy on the other side. So, Elias, let's bring you in here. Cyril Ramaphosa goes to the US, and then he goes to the UK. He's scheduled to go back to the US. You know, we see the pictures with him and Biden, and they're shaking hands, and they're doing all the right things. And, you know, we're thinking economy, we're thinking trade, we're thinking relations. And, of course, this is, you know, the US after all. And then he goes to the UK for, of course, we know what happens there. But then he cuts it short. And he decides to come home because the country is in stage 6 and we have a crisis in, you know, because it suddenly jumps from nowhere to stage 6. And the expectation is that the president is coming home and he's going to deal with it, or he's going to make certain announcements, and things are going to happen. And there's going to be this massive announcement somewhere, you know, within the next few days. And then nothing happens, apart from Pravin Gordhan telling us a few days later that, you know, the board will be reconstructed. Were you as either disappointed and or surprised that nothing came of the rush home, the, you know, like the urgency to get back home to deal with something?
Not really. I mean, it's not for the first time he...
Absolutely, no. Yeah.
But I mean, it happened before. You recall when he was in Egypt. And he basically said, hey, there is a problem in terms of load shedding. I'm going to go back home. And he arrived here, nothing happened. And I think, personally and my constituency, we didn't have any expectation at all. We didn't have any hope. Because he left here while we were still under load shedding and blackouts. So load shedding, it was like a ramp-up thing to say, now we are moving from a certain disruption in terms of energy to load shedding 6. And for him coming back here, I'm saying we didn't expect anything drastic to happen. I mean, you know, it's like you expect a tortoise to run a marathon. And I'll tell you why I'm using that a metaphor. Is because if you take a tortoise, you put it on the line, and you think it's going to run, and the person then shoots for people then to start moving. The tortoise is not going to move. It's like you have an expectation that is not going to be realistic, and you have an expectation that is not going to materialize. It's because if you expected the president to come back here and make miracles in terms of making announcements, having meetings, I mean, it was a sad story. I mean, for him to come back and only to realize that he didn't even have a physical meeting, he had a Zoom meeting. So there was no reason for him to come back. He could be in the U.S. and then do his normal Zoom meetings from that side. But again, let's come back to the real issue here at hand. The real issue is that we have a crisis of energy. We have a crisis of leadership. We have a crisis where the economy is not recovering. We have a crisis where the hope of the people continue to be shattered. We have a hope of a nation that every time they think that things are going to improve and things are going to be better. We have a nation that have been put on hold. I mean, we have students that they're preparing for the exams, and they're preparing this thing in a dark environment where there is no electricity. We have people that they stay in various residential places, whether rural, township, and across the length and breadth of the country, that they're relying on electricity for their health and their livelihood in the form of either they are on the medical support, and those equipment, they depend on electricity. And most of some of them, they've died in various places. And again, we don't even have anything, you know, our conscience as leadership, it doesn't even say anything. We have health institutions in the form of government hospitals. And I'm not talking about private, because private, they have all the resources.
They've got the technology and the generators.
Yeah, so I'm talking about government hospitals, government clinics, that the bulk of the people in this country, they're relying on that, and they don't have those means. They don't have the resources. I mean, those institutions, government, we have seen in recent days where various MECs from different provinces shouting to say, can they be exempted when there is load shedding? But the thing, load shedding doesn't start yesterday. I mean, whether we move from level 6 to level 5 to level 4 to level 3. And then I think for some of us, we are not even celebrating that, because the fact of the matter that remains, we don't have electricity and the economy is not going to recover. And every time we don't have electricity, guess what? It then dent the confidence of the investors to invest their money, because they're basically saying, if I put my money here, I'm not going to find any return on the money. Even to the extent that a number of companies, they are even working short time, and that impacts on the livelihood of people, because the manner in which their life is centered around a particular salary have been reduced, because if they work for 3 hours or 4 hours, basically they'll be paid for that period in certain sectors, and in other sectors it will be no work, no pay, because there is nothing that they can then do. So these are some, that's what I'm saying, you know, we have a range of issues that affects people in different forms and shape, but the rationale that cut across that we are a nation that is in the dark, we are a nation that is leaderless. We don't get any direction from the presidency, from the minister, from the board. I mean, since this thing started, load shedding and blackouts, the board, basically, they're absent in whatever form or shape. And I mean, even when the minister now is saying he's going to restructure the board.
Reconfigure and and reconstitute.
What do you reconstitute and restructure? Because the term of office expired 2 years ago. So technically, it was supposed then to make a call for nomination for new board members to say, can we get people that are competent to run that thing? So that, I mean, even now, they don't even have an engineer in their board.
And I think, Elias, that's I want to move to Adil here. And Elias has said a lot, and you can actually hear the frustration. And I think, you know, I mean, that frustration plays out in what Elias is beginning to talk about there. But he unpacks it in the sense of, you know, it's impacting the business, and you can hear the frustration in that. We are leaderless. We don't have the leaders. Let me ask you this, Adil. The conversation for me has somehow moved from one of, it's an Eskom problem, we need to fix Eskom, we need lots of energy, we need more energy. And that almost seems to, people have questioned that and said, but you've got enough energy, you just don't maybe have the capacity to bring it to us. Because, you know, it's one of your problems. For me, and you can correct me here, for me the conversation has slightly moved to one of capacity within Eskom, in a skills particular form. And we're now beginning to engage and saying, do we have the leadership at Eskom? Do we have the skills in the board? Because I heard a conversation today that said, if I'm sitting in front of somebody who doesn't understand, you know, technology that an engineer would use, how would I either be able to agree with him? How would I be able to correct him? How would I be able to change his plan and give him new direction? So for me, that's beginning to become more of a conversation now than, well, the two are still happening, but the skills conversation is happening louder and louder.
Yeah, I think maybe before we even delve deeper into the issue of skills, let me first of all start by saying actually a really big round of applause. Let's thank all the station managers, power station managers across the country, because these are the people who are working with their core staff and employees and the so-called unskilled workforce, which actually is really a misnomer in this country, because we are sitting here today, the lights are on, and there is a proper frequency in the country in terms of electricity generation because of that workforce. So we don't thank them enough. And I just want to say really thank you to all the power station managers. Thank you to the staff. Thank you to the cohort of Eskom employees who, despite all this negative thrashing they get about how they are unskilled, about how they are not knowledgeable, they have been doing the job that most would not even step into the plate and do it. So let's get to understand what this whole aspect of it is about. The over-exaggeration to say that there's an over-skills, there's actually under-skills, and there is an over-employment in Eskom is actually a lie. You're running power stations that in the 80s, they were already running at 65,000 at one point of employees. Today, they are running at 46, 47,000 employees, and it is actually drastically being reduced, which means power stations are being shut down and they are being taken off.
But isn't that also a conversation with technology?
Not necessarily technology. Okay. When you shut down a power station, you're shutting down an entire cohort of manpower. So you're saying that we're taking away 2,000, 3,000 megawatts off the grid, which means a whole lot of people that are employed in those power stations are going to go with that power station itself. So what is happening right now is there's a systematic winding down. It's not a conspiracy, because I hear a lot of South Africans love the term conspiracy theories. No. Currently, Eskom is embarking on a total shutdown, winding down of power stations due to the fact that they say they want to make sure that these power plants have reached a life of plant, and as a result cannot be extended. And on top of it, there is now the pushback by the Minister of Environmental Affairs, who says that there is a environmental, you know, air quality and air pollution issue that must be mitigated against the national interest, which is really unheard of anywhere in the world. So let's start at that. Maybe give a quick synopsis of what is Eskom, because most people just see Eskom as this entity that just produces a light. When you switch on a plug, it works. This is how Eskom is made up of. Eskom is made up of what we call primary energy. Primary energy is all the power stations that are scattered around the country that are generating electricity from coal, from hydropower. They are generating electricity from nuclear. They are generating electricity using generators that are actually pumping currently diesel. They are generating electricity using renewables energy that is bought from the renewable suppliers right now. And then you're looking at from that point of view that energy is then pushed out from the current grid, is then pushed out to what we call a systems operator. What a systems operator does is one function that is core and key. all the power stations must synchronize, which means they must all run at one speed, at one frequency across the entire spectrum of the country to make sure that there is electricity that doesn't flick up and down. And that systems operator gives us a 50 hertz of electricity frequency that is pushed out into the network. And based on that, they balance the electricity supply and demand in real time. The systems operator, when he sees that there is a shortage of a required electricity, which is the demand, he will then make a call to all the currently consumers out in the market, whether it's municipalities, whether it's to do with mines or the cities, to say, we're having a problem. We only have this amount of electricity available and we can only supply this amount. So can you reduce the demand on your side so that we meet you at the balance? And that is the most critical work. If you don't do that, you will have the entire country exploding into smithereens, power stations burning down, transformers and everything. So people don't comprehend.
And we would really be in the dark.
Yeah. We'll be in the dark, right? And this is what becomes critical. From there, the systems operator pushes it into what we call transmission lines. In the transmission lines, it's pushed across. The transmission lines carries it across the 35,000 kilometers of lines on overhead pylons in South Africa.
The grid.
Then distribute it, what we call the grid.
That's the grid.
Then distribute it into what we call distribution center. You know, your load centers, your what you call the distribution stations, where you find the major stations in the cities as well as the towns. And then from there, it's pushed across to the customer, which is the end user customer, whether it's a mine, whether it's a school, whether it's a farm. Whether
the guy now who does flip the switch.
When we flip the switch, it works. And we see the connection. But if you go in there, South Africa has one of the most incredible, amazing infrastructure of technology. It spans from the distance of the UK right up to the end of Russia in terms of its distance on electricity line and coverage. That is how big this infrastructure is. So when people speak Eskom, somehow you hear this misinformed view that it's just something that you can just completely switch off and then switch on something brand new. And then suddenly, you know, it will be Christmas and we'll all be
because there are sometimes
not Adil, understanding the history.
Yes, but I think, you know, Adil, with what you've said, there are different conversations happening within or about Eskom as to the various capacity and knowledge of what you would know.
Absolutely.
So some people do just talk about the switch, you know, and that's rightful because that's where his entry point is and he wants that to work. And then there is the broader, bigger element and conversation about Eskom. Now, for me, for the layman, Adil, I'm at the switch. I understand what you've just said. But how much of it is important to me to make that understanding? And why do I have to have, here's my question, why do I have to have that understanding when I know at some point it worked? I don't need to know the, you know, the detail of it moves over and it's as big as Russia. At some point it worked when I've made this flip switch. Why is it suddenly a conversation where I need to understand and unpack this whole thing that you just unpacked for us and have an understanding of it? And suddenly that's my problem.
Thanks.
People are there, and when these announcements are made, government has a responsibility. They take that responsibility to Eskom. Eskom has a responsibility as an entity. That entity has certain shareholders. Those shareholders do certain things so that at the end of the day, my switch works. So then something is drastically wrong. And for me, the guy at the switch wants to know what the drastic problem is. Is it an issue of money? Is it an issue of incompetence? Is it issue of, you know, new technology? Is it an issue of corruption? What is it? You know what I'm saying? And sometimes, and I went into the skills conversation because I find that question is happening. Sometimes, what you begin to hear with the Eskom conversation is that state capture becomes the elephant in the room, and everything happened under this cloud of state capture, and everybody forgets the conversation you just had. And so we blame, you know, people that we don't know, faceless people, just state capture did this. And sometimes I think state capture becomes the easy scapegoat. So what do you say to what I've just said?
You know, the unfortunate part of it is that one, they've confused engineering, they've confused mechanical engineering, They've confused basics such as legislation. Mm. ESCOM is an entity of legislation. It was created by an act of parliament that gave it the power under the Electricity Act and bill, which was started. Then it gave it the power to generate electricity to make sure that electricity is made available cheap and is distributed across the economy to make sure that everybody else has access to it as a basic commodity, as a basic fundamental right.
Mm.
And that part of it is required that ESCOM be given the powers to become a natural monopoly in a state-based, because monopolies of a state are natural monopolies because they don't earn any profit. Mm. They don't corner out any other players in order to literally take them out of business. They complement everybody else who's within that hemisphere. So the reason why ESCOM remains an entity of state today is because it enjoys a natural monopoly that must benefit the citizens because it does not generate electricity for profit. The minute you take away that, you are now creating an environment whereby we privatize, we commoditize electricity generation, and it becomes something that it can now be literally traded like in a stock market where people can do what we call speculation and all sorts of other tricks, either hoarding and everything. And this is what we're starting to see in our electricity markets, whereby there are players who are now getting in and are seeing the value market. ESCOM is only charging the country $200 billion annually. $200 billion to create this electricity that makes the whole of South Africa literally run on what we have become used to as our normal natural way of life of having electricity 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. Take that current monopoly and give it to private entities. They will be charging you $1 trillion a year. Why? Because they have to maximize on their returns. They have to maximize on their investment and a whole lot of other things.
And you have to report to shareholders who say, listen,
we want to bleed as much as we can and take more. So the whole entity of why the debate of, for instance, this whole state capture came into play is, one, we were diverted. For me, I pity the people who went through the whole 2 years process of state capture and really doing that whole process of engaging. But at the end of the day, it was not an outcome which all of us South Africans fully agree with, because there were certain testimonies that were presented till today. They are not yet uncovered. So I don't think state capture was the right platform to even bring in ESCOM into, because if we had to bring in ESCOM, if we spoke about the real fundamental truths, today the mining industry that enjoys the bulk of the value of South Africa's economy would be the current culprits at the state capture reports and will be held accountable. And to some point, the nation will be demanding that the heads of those directors and CEOs should have been cut by now. And we didn't have that. So somebody got away with a huge heist.
Sure.
And misdirected the national conversation into literally corners that didn't help us. So far, no mining industry was taken away when the Guptas left South Africa. The money that was alleged to be said, nobody has proven to date that they are actually recovering it or they know where it is and how it was moved. So we were literally taken into a whole cul-de-sac which has no benefit, unfortunately. But what we're sitting with right now is the entire warped conversation of what should have been the real conversation. Why do we need electricity in South Africa? We come from an apartheid legacy that denied us of development, that denied us of the privilege to become fully developed society with all the privileges of a proper functioning society. And this is one of the most depressing things. When today I came around, I spent a day in Sebokeng, the most horrid condition. We live in privileged life in suburbs, in towns, in cities. Go to Sebokeng, go to Mamelodi, go to Winterfeld at the streets, the hardcore dusty streets with water running around their alleyways of rivers. Look at the lifestyle of our people. Look at the conditions they're trapped in. The heat, there's no air conditioning. The houses are completely at substandard build. Most are made out of concrete and
zinc,
out of it, right?
Furniture
is of substandard. The children are neglected, running on the streets on their own. You have parents who are sitting on the streets, are sitting on the corners, are sitting in the front of their porches, completely hopeless at 1 o'clock in the day. You have a country that has majority, 80% of its population, sitting and not knowing what the next hour is going to be. And they have no purpose in their lives. That we must ask ourselves a question as a nation. Is this right and correct?
Let me bring Elias in. Elias, lots has been said, Elias. So, you know, I want to raise a few issues with you, but I also need you to respond to all the things that were said. So let's just get your thoughts on some of the issues that have been raised. Skills, you know, and whether, you know, the culprit in the room is state capture, because I mean that for me sometimes has just become the buzzword for everything. So, you know, skills was the issue I raised, and then also state capture, but so many other things have been raised as well.
I think let's reflect on what are we talking about here, so that we don't talk general issues. We zoom into the issues at hand, because I mean the same ESCOM that today we are discussing, it was number second or number two in the whole world in terms of supplying cheap and sustainable electricity. Mm. The same ESCOM. Mm. So we're not talking about something that it was never done.
And this was in the 2000s?
Mm. Yes. Mm. I'm saying in the 2000s. We're not talking about in the 80s.
Mm. This was in the 2000s.
In the 2000s. Now, the point that I'm raising is that is about leadership. Mm. You know, when ESCOM started cutting maintenance, and I'm saying this is a basic 101. If you cut maintenance of your fleet, you are not going to have that fleet doing things that ordinarily they will basically then deliver in terms of efficiency and effectiveness of sustainable electricity. Mm. And even if we want to argue around the lifespan of our coal power station, I mean, and this thing is ironical because we want to procure electricity from Botswana, and the same coal power station that we are looking at in Botswana is older than even our own fleet. In this country. So the point is the following. You might have an old equipment, but if that equipment is taken care of, you maintain it, you can basically then proceed and continue then to deliver certain things. And I'm saying, that's what I'm saying, for me, that's maintenance 101. I mean, ESCOM have cut maintenance, not now, for many years. Now, the point at hand here is not about talking about general things. I mean, we talk about the base load. The base load in the main is around what is called dispatchable energy that is secured in any given time. When an ordinary person press or touch a switch, that person doesn't want to be told a technical explanation around the person expect, then I press this thing, then be light, or then there must be heat in terms of
exactly.
They don't want stories. Mm. Over the years, I'm saying over the years, when this guy took over, day in, day out, we get stories around, I mean, you recall when the chair of ESCOM, again, it was somebody who was non-technical. Said to us, you know, the reason why we have load shedding is because the coal was wet. And I'm saying that is an excuse of note. And then again, all of us, we were born while it was raining, and we never had this problem. And then I'm saying, my point that I'm driving at is that to date, every time when ESCOM, they go to the media trying to explain the reasons why we have this problem, they give us a long list of excuses. Workers, they are on strike. The conveyor belt is not working. The coal is wet. Lots of issues, sabotage. People are stealing things and all these things.
There was the bolt which fell in the generator of some sort. Remember years ago, Alec Irwin.
So I'm saying to you, the reason why I don't speak, I'm not referring to ordinary workers on the ground, because management, the reason why we have management, they must manage. They must manage executive, they must take hard decisions in any given situation. Now, And then again, I applaud those workers on the ground that they are providing this thing. And they keep giving information to their managers and executive. Now, here where the skills problem comes in. You have a worker who's competent and skilled to tell you exactly the problems, but the manager or the executive or the board member, they don't know what they're talking about. And I'm saying that is the skill gap, the skill problem that I'm referring to. You have a CEO who doesn't understand how energy is generated. Now, you then ask yourself, if you then have an expert, you have an engineer having a problem with a coal power station to say, you know, the problem, we have A, B, C, D, X, Y, Z, we have this equipment that's not working. So it's difficult for that CEO then to comprehend because he doesn't understand this thing. Now, even if you were to get an advice, to what extent then does he deal with advice because he doesn't understand? I'm saying part of the problem is the base load. The base load, because we're not maintaining our coal power station, we're not dealing with gas properly. We're not dealing with our nuclear. I mean, our nuclear station in Quebec. Historically, I mean, they used to send people to France because it was built by the French. I mean, if we were then to ask anyone from Quebec to say, when did you last went for training to France or wherever in terms of understanding the new trends, it's shocking when you get that information. Now, my point is the following. They stop maintaining the base load on the basis that, you know, they were told we need them to relocate the IPPs, the independent power producers. I mean, the difference between what is called base load. Base load is where you get a guaranteed electricity in any given time. When you press that switch, the lights are on or off. Now, the IPP, you are dependent on weather. If it's not windy, you cannot have electricity. If you don't have the sun, you cannot have power.
You also wouldn't have electricity.
Yes, you are not going to have electricity. And we're then being told that you need then to look at battery storage. On maximum, the storage is 4 hours. Now, if it rains, I'm saying let's look at various permutations. If it rains for a week, in which we know that in this country it will rain for a week, it will rain for weeks, for a month or so. So it then means you're not going to have electricity because you are relying on the sun. If you use solar, if again you rely on wind and there is nothing happening, you don't have any wind. I mean, also we know that it's not all the towns where we have wind. The Eastern Cape is known for wind for whatever reasons. And again, even in the Eastern Cape, if there are weeks and months where there's no wind, it then means you're not going to have electricity. Now, the point is then the following. We suppose then nobody's saying we should not look at the IPP. The IPP is like a cherry on top. It's about the energy mix. And the discussions that is the country supposed then to deal with. It's not about the IPP now. It's about to talk about the maintenance of the base load so that we then deal with this thing. And again, it's not about the capacity. We do have the capacity as a country because in terms of the megawatt, we do have sufficient. But the problem is that we cannot then have that because of lack of maintenance. We're not maintaining what we can then offer and do this thing. Now, again, the irony. We supply some of the countries with electricity from Eskom, and they don't have load shedding in those countries. And the primary source, which is us here in this country, we have load shedding. So again, that's another part of the problem. Now, again, even if we're then to look at this thing, one will then think, why is this thing deliberate or not? To date, I mean, we have run diesel. We have run diesel more than any other period. I mean, if you then look at the amount of money that Eskom have spent to date, it runs into billions for the cost of diesel. We don't even know who supplied diesel.
I have a question.
Yeah.
And I have a particular narrative too then.
Yeah.
And here's the question, right? Because, and I'll come to Adil too. Why does it take... If I have an understanding, why does it take a pandemic to basically begin to get us to solve our problems. In COVID, we suddenly saw people getting running water, for example. And it took weeks for them to get running water because that's what you needed to deal with within this particular pandemic. You needed to deal with issues of water. But we could be able then suddenly to get people running water in the most rural parts of the country. So I'm going to particularly draw out another particular narrative. We've known about Eskom. Adil's told us about, the long journey we've walked about it. You say, of course, we've had this thing from the apartheid eras. We've been through the 2000s where it was one of the best in the world. So I'm going to put something to you, and as controversial as it seems or would sound, you can answer it. Here's the thing. Is it really then, when you said the word deliberate, it triggered something within me. Is it sometimes an option of comrades have to get their ducks in a row, comrades have to get their business plans in a row before we can fix something so that by the time we begin to see that we've generated this problem, but we can't fix it until comrades are ready and established, and once we then open the doors, those are the comrades that begin to enter that space. And it's so predictable that we've seen it over and over and over again. In this particular instance, is it sometimes, because you need to play devil's advocate with this thing sometimes and say, we saw it coming, what then is the problem in this? And is the problem sometimes one of those whereby we've just got to wait for people to be in the waiting for it, they've already lined up, and then we open the door? Because today, I wish I was in the diesel business. And you're a businessman, Elias.
Yeah. Mm. So I think you're quite right in what I'm saying. I want to remind you and the listeners that when the Rita was appointed, he was not appointed to fix Eskom. He was appointed to dismantle Eskom into three, if you recall. The president went to the State of the Nation and said, Eskom is going to be dismantled into three, generation, transmission, and distribution. That was the rationale. And post that, they didn't even bother to address the maintenance. And what followed after is the reduction of the maintenance of the base load. Thirdly, what followed also is the IPP, where now all of a sudden we are pushing the narrative that we need then to have independent power producers in the form of solar and wind and battery storage. Even Eskom at a particular stage, you're saying residents or people, they need them to buy the solar, they need them, if they connect, they will get whatever amount of money and all these things. But the point that I'm raising is the following, that, again, we've seen most of the state-owned entities, and I'm saying as a country, we've run them down, whether it's NEL, whether it's SAA, and the list is long. And the reason why, again, we have done that, I mean, SAA was bought by less than, 2 rand. And then now you could tell. Now, if the rationale was that dismantle Eskom into three entities, the intention was then to sell it, privatize this thing. And somebody would then get this thing close to nothing and then ramp it up and make more money.
Which plays on the word deliberate that you used.
I'm saying which basically then fall into the what I said is deliberate. Because, again, if people they're not paying electricity, then means you then leave distribution with government. Because government and municipalities, generation and transmission is where the private will then make money in terms of this thing. But my point again is the following. If indeed we want them to resolve and deal with these issues, I mean, the IPP is not a solution that will address the load shedding and the blackout. The blackouts will be dealt and addressed once and for all when we manage the base load, we maintain the base load, we deal with the issues at hand. I mean, again, let me venture to the notion of pollution and environmental affairs, because You'll recall that in one of the windows from the Minister of Energy, the car power ship, car power ship was something that will then come in and then deal with the additional energy that we require, because power ship, they then produce electricity utilizing gas, and that also then guarantee it constitutes part of the base load. Now, what then happens? You then have environmental affairs not issuing the required licenses for car power ship then to operate. Now we are 2 years basically down the road, still going back and forward, back
sure.
and forth. Because the rationale, we are not not meant to deal with the base load. We are pushing the narrative, the independent power producer. And then that's the point that I'm saying to you. Again, we know that we're not in, the intention is not then to address the efficiency and provide electricity to our people.
Sure. Let me come here to somebody who's been wanting to join the conversation again. Adil?
Quick one. I think Elias has elaborated very well, and he's been extremely conservative, very careful. And
he's choosing his words.
He's choosing his words very carefully. Look, let's be very clear and honest. The blame of this whole mess of electricity supply stops at the headquarters, which is the ANC. The ANC has failed to govern this country, and it's resulting in the current collapse of Eskom as a simple one of the biggest monopoly in South Africa that has guaranteed the ANC's rule since 1994. ANC came into power on the promise that it will provide cheap electricity and free electricity to all for the duration of its leadership throughout all these years. And as a result, has now reached a point whereby it is failing to keep to that core focus and mandate. And that is why things are falling apart and they are going all over the show. Let's not mess around with it and everything. If today the public were to be given an opportunity based on the performance of the load shedding crisis to vote for a different party, the ANC today will be voted out of power.
Based on the current
scenario of the crisis of electricity supply, the ANC would not even get a percent of votes in South Africa, on the basis that South Africans across the plethora of the country are irritated, angry. I mean, the anger levels, I cannot even explain. White, black, Indian, colored, and even immigrants across the board are all angry with the ANC's not underperformance, we must not even mince words, of its dismal failure to just guarantee the most simplest of a basic life, the basic service delivery, which is providing electricity, where we know that as citizens, we cannot provide it. 80% of our people are poor, cannot buy solar, cannot buy wind generators, cannot buy battery packs to make sure that they have a 250,000 rand system at their homes to provide for themselves an electricity that is guaranteed 24 hours for themselves. So we have to not really mesh around with words and be very specific. We have to hold the ANC accountable and give them the last once-off opportunity to say, if this crisis does not wake up the ruling party and sends it to its really, a working desk.
Okay,
and say that either we correct this mess, get back to the fundamentals of governance, of governing, take over control of Eskom. Make sure that you have the right people who are leading Eskom right now. Make sure that the board is revitalized and given its impetus and mandate by legislation, by the ruling party's manifesto, to produce that cheap electricity and make sure that the power plants are working and make sure that the lives of ordinary South Africans are restored to its normal course and normal day-to-day lives that we are used to.
I want to put it to you.
Income is generated. So I think we...
I want to put it to you that the ANC has already told you what they want to do through their public enterprises minister. And that is those two words, reconstruct and reconfigure.
No.
And seemingly that's their solution. What other plan do they have?
It's not the truth.
What other plan do they have?
Does not talk right now as we're speaking to the Minister of Public Enterprise. The Minister of Public Enterprise does not report to the ANC's core leadership, including the National Executive Council of the ANC today. And they are not sitting on the same table today. The party is
is non-functional at the headquarters level due to its own financial, in a, what do you call it, mismanagement. They are sitting with a situation where they cannot have a voice over its own leadership of society today. And they are unable to even influence a simple minister such as Minister Pravin Gordhan and tell him that you are going to make sure that we prioritize the fixing of all of those 30 power stations in South Africa, bring them back to their efficiency levels, make sure that you shoot up the power availability level to above 75,000. We're sitting at almost 56% of electricity availability factor. It's an incredible complete collapse. You cannot go on at this stage. People are depressed in South Africa, as I'm telling you. So if the ANC does not wake up and really smell the coffee, if today there was a snap election, they would be out of power. That is the first warning message that we must be very clear about. We can talk about how megawatts are generated and how coal contributes to this whole thing. At the end of the day, if the father of the home, which is the leader of our society, which is the ANC today, does not step up its game and sit on the home table, at the front of the table, and say, guys, we have made mistakes and we want to take accountability. And doing that, we are going to take bold and decisive actions. One, fire the board of Eskom right now. Ensure that you install people that have capacity that will make sure that their best heart is in the right place. Fixing of those power stations is a critical requirement. You bring back 5,000, you have completely solved the load shedding crisis we're sitting with for the next 300 days. Eskom is promising that they're going to be load shedding us at stage 4 and 5 for the next coming 300 days. Can you stomach that, knowing that your day-to-day disruption is going to continue and there will not be any income? You cannot service your bond properly because you're earning half of your salary. You cannot do a business because every time you have to plan for this irritation called load shedding. So it comes back to one. The ANC is failing society and it's losing power. And with this current scenario of load shedding, it will be completely voted out of power unless they stand up themselves as leaders. What happened on Monday when the leaders of COSATU, the ordinary members of COSATU who were delegates to the conference, demonstrated against the Minister of Energy and Minerals, Mantashe, and told him, under no circumstance you are going to talk to us unless you solve the workers' issue. That is the same action that we need to be taken by the ANC leadership and core to say, put an end to load shedding and do not give us excuses. You want to do any other thing, don't irritate the lives of our citizens and make sure that the power stations are working. Because the problem of Eskom right now on load shedding is that power stations, it's not the new builds, it's not to do with any of the budgets of introducing this technology or that technology. It's about getting back the fundamentals back. What Europe is going through, where there is an electricity shortage, there is no availability of gas, there is no, now they are opening up their coal power stations in rush to even buy. They've bought over the last 3 months South Africa's coal over 8 times. They've never done that kind of a purchase sale of South Africa's coal in terms of reviving their coal plants. We're the only idiots in the world who are selling, yet at the same time we cannot even see the value of our coal in how it will stabilize our economy. I told you, Eskom is selling us electricity at the most cheapest, 200 billion across the whole country. And this economy is worth over 5 trillion on an annual basis. Sure. Think about it.
Elias, then we're in trouble.
I mean, you know, we made a call a few months ago, and we continue making that call for people to be held accountable and be fired. And I think some people or some organization, they followed suit because we said the entire board need to be fired. Andre the Rater and the COO need to be fired. We've made that call. And because our understanding is that, you know, anything starts with leadership. Anything starts and stops with leadership. You don't start by blaming a worker on the ground. And if we don't have a leader who cannot see and understand the problems, then we don't have a leader. If we have people that they cannot even make decisive actions or take decisions at the right time, is a problem. Because, you know, as a leader, if you miss an opportunity, it's gone. And then even when the minister is saying now, you know, watch the space, we're going to reconstruct and restructure the board, it's too late. People need to be fired. I mean, what are you talking about? Because the terms of office of this board came to an end 2 years ago. So And not only that, and he's also then washing his hands because he's saying the question of the CEO must be dealt with by the board. And again, for me, that's nonsensical because we don't have electricity as things stand. So whether it's load shedding 3 or 4, the fact of the matter, we don't have electricity. And I agree with my colleague, my panelist there, that one of the things is that we have caught. I'm not conservative nor apologetic. I've raised this thing sharply, and I said we need to be honest and brutal if we want to deal with the issues. We don't have leadership. We don't have leadership in the form of government and in the form of ESCOM, because I mean, to date, nobody from ESCOM board addressed this issue. The minister is not addressing this issue. Safe to say, he's talking about the to reconstruct and do whatever with the board, and that's not the people on the ground. They don't want to hear whether you're appointing somebody or fire. They want to know, am I going to get electricity or yes or no?
Elias,
say in the next coming 12 months or so, we'll continue with those shedding. It basically means we have a problem, a serious problem. And then I think for some of us, we are basically saying, fire the entire board. And surely, even the minister got done. It's not doing his job. It's not doing his job. And again, rightly so. When the workers at COSATU, remember, even this thing didn't start yesterday at COSATU. Started even May Day, when workers refused the state president to address them at the May Day to say he's not going to.
Elias, I have to go to the news, but Elias, I have to thank you for coming onto Power Perspective tonight.
No, thank you.
Thank you so much. And to my guest here in studio, Adil. Maybe, Adil, I don't need to do you on the phone. Maybe we need to have the conversations here in studio, because I talk to you on the phone, and when you're here in studio, I see your blood boil. I see the passion you have for this industry. I see the passion you have for all of this. Maybe you need to come into studio more often.
Thank you so much.
Adil, thank you so much, bro.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.